ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The four astronauts are getting used to life on solid ground. And while we might be winding down our coverage,
NASA's already eyeing the next Artemis mission. I'm ABC science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily-ish podcast about the Artemis 2 mission to the moon
for science fiction on ABC Radio National.
Let's skip mission in under a minute because, you know, the main part's over. Mm. But I would love to get an update on what our emotional support astronauts have been up to since they landed a few days ago. So, yeah, what have they been doing?
They've been very busy. So within a day, they were actually wheeled out in front of audiences and they've been on TV.
Oh, my gosh. They've just been in space. Just give them some time to put their feet up.
I have absolutely no idea what to say. This is 24 hours ago, the Earth was that big out the window and we were doing Mach 39 and here we are back at Ellington at home.
It's actually quite interesting because watching this video, you can kind of tell that they are still really processing how this all went down. So Reid Wiseman talked first and he talked about how much he missed his family while he was up there. Victor Glover said that he had not processed what he did. He also thanked God and teared up explaining how grateful he was for the experience. Christina Cook talked about how seeing tiny Earth from outside of the spacecraft, she thought of it as a lifeboat hanging in the universe.
Oh, which was it just really gives beautiful. Me tingles, yeah.
And then Jeremy Hansen said, and I quote, "It's been a lot and this isn't helping, but this is the furthest I've been away from Reid in a long time."
I experienced that feeling actually in the past couple of days, but we've had time off of this podcast with you, Jacinta. So, you know, I can understand Jeremy Hansen's feelings.
At least we went in a tiny little capsule together.
This is true. I mean, a studio feels like it sometimes.
Yeah.
And you haven't heard us talk a lot about the science, the things we've learned, and that's because they're there, and they're incredible. But it's the human experience that is extraordinary for us, and it sounds like maybe for you too.
It's quite interesting now that we don't have a 24/7 feed of them that we can watch exactly what they're up to. We've had to go back to stalking them the old-fashioned way on social media.
Ah, great.
So one thing I wanted to highlight was that Christina got home and videoed her dog being so excited to see her. It's really beautiful. I mean, 10 days in space and I think this dog was the most excited out of all of us that she was home.
Imagine how she smelled to that dog.
So weird.
It would be really strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Jeremy said that he got to enjoy his 23rd wedding anniversary with his wife, which happened just a few days after landing, which is cool as well.
Very nice. Yeah. Lovely. Good one, Jeremy. What else have they been up to? Surely there's some sort of official astronaut business they also have to take care of.
Yeah, there has been some official astronaut business. So they've been doing reconditioning, medical and human performance evaluations, and lunar science debriefs. Weirdly, they actually did a simulated moonwalk pretty soon after they landed. They had the full spacesuit on because NASA wanted to test how astronauts would go after being in space so that when they actually go to the moon, you'd be able to see how they would act immediately after those low gravity conditions.
Oh, wow. Okay. So how long after they actually landed did they have to get suited up again?
I'm not sure, but it was within the first 24 hours.
Interesting. Okay. Speaking of sciencey stuff, we've talked a lot about the amount of data that's been generated by this mission. You know, thousands and thousands of photos, hours of audio of the astronauts talking about what they're seeing. And, you know, scientists will be analysing these and other data for ages, but when can we expect to find out what they discover?
So NASA has said that they're going to release the findings. This will be public. It'll be for everybody. And this will be in something called a preliminary lunar science report. And that's obviously extremely exciting. It'll be extremely exciting for all of the scientists as well that weren't part of this because they can look at that data, analyze the data themselves and see what they can do with it, which is really cool.
Right. So all the images and everything will be released for the public to access.
Yes.
And so even people like you or I could get in there, analyze things. We see this often with missions. Like I remember the Juno mission to Jupiter. A lot of amateur astronomers got the data afterwards and generated some of the most stunning images of the biggest gas giant in our solar system that people from NASA just didn't do.
Yeah, kudos to NASA that they do release all of this information.
And this is all going to happen within 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. We actually have a question from Sophia, who's aged 6, and she wanted to know, what is the moon made of? Does it have gold or silver or diamonds on it? And will the photos from the Artemis II rocket teach us what the moon is made of?
It's made of cheese, of course, as we all know.
Grey cheese, the most delicious cheese.
So, well, I guess it's greeny brownie cheese, right? Maybe yes, it's mouldy. No. So the moon is quite a similar composition to what we have on Earth. Even though it does look quite different and it's a lot drier, there are quite a few similarities. So there's minerals like magnesium and iron in small amounts. And moon missions to the surface, more specifically collecting regolith or the soil on the moon, could tell us what's below the surface. So we haven't been able to get that kind of dirt from the moon since those missions 50 years ago. So being able to get more of those would be a very, very exciting part of science to be able to work out more of this.
Okay, so you just listed a few minerals there, but I wasn't hearing gold or silver or diamonds.
Yeah, that's because, so when I talked about those particular minerals, we know that they're there. Gold, there may be a little bit, but probably not much. Silver, there is some, but not a lot. All of these things are quite minimal on Earth, and they're also going to be quite minimal in the moon. Diamonds, I don't think you'll have any luck with diamonds. I don't think there'll be any on there.
Shame. Okay, so not mining for diamonds on the moon.
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay, so we've got some science-y results coming out in the next 6 months. But what about the next Artemis mission? We keep hearing about Artemis 3. What does that involve and when's that going to happen?
Yes, so Artemis 3 has been touted in a lot of the post event press conferences is like, what's the next stage? This is not a moon landing mission. It was going to be, but they changed it in February so that now it's going to be staying in Earth's orbit and it's going to test docking with commercial landers. And the reason why they want to do this is because when we went round the moon, that's a very exciting thing and it needs a lot of science to be able to get you there. But going from the orbit of the moon to the surface of the moon is a whole extra step and you need a whole new set of stuff. In the Apollo missions, they had landers, which are basically things that would come down from orbit and then land on the moon and then take you back up from the moon back to orbit again. And that's quite difficult. And NASA, in this case, have actually outsourced that to private companies. One of them is SpaceX and one of them is Blue Origin. And so what they're hoping to do is use those particular spacecraft with the Orion capsule to be able to see whether they can get those two things to work together. And it doesn't sound as exciting, but it is an important part of making sure that this stuff works. And currently, Blue Origin's Blue Moon spacecraft and SpaceX's Starship are both behind schedule. So there definitely needs to be more work to make sure that we get this stuff going.
Yeah. So when did NASA say that they were hoping to get Artemis 3 off the ground?
At this stage, they're hoping for mid next year, which is so soon.
That's very soon.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And there's also some things that they have to fix as well. Like obviously the toilet is a big issue. They have to make sure that that's working. So making sure that that stuff is fixed is pretty important for when they actually land on the moon the next few years.
So will there be astronauts on Artemis 3?
They will be, and they haven't actually announced who they are yet. I think that there was, I mean, those astronauts, the Artemis 3 astronauts, were going to be the ones that landed on the moon. So maybe it'd be a bit of a demotion if you just have to do a couple of orbits of the Earth.
I wonder if they'll go with the Artemis 2 astronauts.
Oh, I mean, we'd love to see them again, wouldn't we?
It would be great. So nice. Yeah. Just tap into their lives again in a year's time. Okay, so just say everything goes really well with Artemis 3. Is there an Artemis 4 planned?
Yes. So Artemis 4 is when we will hopefully get a moon landing.
Look, we've actually got a really good question from John about communication in space. So he asks, to enable communication from the dark side of the moon or the far side of the moon, could we launch a moon-orbiting communication satellite from Earth?
We sure could. And actually, it's already happening. So the European Space Agency's Moonlight program is actually hoping to launch a network of satellites, and that will be around the moon. So it'll work quite similar to the way that they do on Earth, and it'll mean that when a spacecraft goes around the moon, they'll be able to use that satellite that would be closer to Earth and visible from Earth so that we could just get the connection directly and we wouldn't have any of those blackouts that we had on this mission.
As usual, we've got so many great questions, so we're going to try and get through as many as possible before we wind this up. So this is from Peter, and he asks, the Artemis astronauts were in space for 10 days. Because they were travelling quite fast both towards and away from us here on Earth, their clock will be different to ours due to special relativity. Also, because they've been further up Earth's gravity well, their clocks will be different due to general relativity. How much difference will there be due to each component? Whew!
Peter, you are my kind of nerd. I love it.
Do we have time to go into this?
So put really simply, if you're moving really fast and your gravity is different, you will experience time differently. And that happens even in really small amounts on missions like this. I couldn't find the data for the Artemis astronauts specifically. I'm sure that will come out, but we haven't got it yet. But we do know that they will be slightly different. The reason is because I managed to find the data for the Apollo astronauts as they did this kind of experiment with the clocks on board. So in Apollo 12, there was a gain of 560 microseconds, and Apollo 13 gained 326 microseconds. I'm going to say, I'm going to make an educated guess and say that the Artemis astronauts will be closer to Apollo 12 because that was also a 10-day mission.
Okay, so just unpacking this a bit, the clock on Apollo 12 after their mission would have been 560 microseconds ahead of the clock that remained on Earth.
Yes, and the reason for that is because of general and special relativity.
Okay, let's go from crazy mind-bending physics to a slightly simpler question. So this is from Emily, who's 5. She wants to know why she can see the moon during the day, even when the sun is out. And she's been enjoying imagining the 4 Artemis astronauts flying through space back to Earth.
I really did enjoy that as well. Watching the moon as it's doing its thing has been very different the last few days. Earth is in the middle. Let's say that we've got a picture, the sun, the moon, and the Earth in your mind. We're standing on some portion of the Earth and we can see the sun, because it is daylight and that is what happens. However, we can also see the moon from where we are. Now, when you can see the moon during the daytime, the sun is also hitting the moon at the same time as it's hitting the Earth. So when those two things line up, which happens quite a bit, you can see the moon during the daytime.
So while we need the sun to have daytime, the moon can be in the sky at any time of the day or night.
Yeah, it's not just a night object, and we love that about it.
A question here from Beck, who asks, how come we can't see the space junk, satellites, and space station in the pictures the crew are taking of Earth?
Yeah, another good question, and something that you don't really think about as well. So the space station, which is the biggest orbital satellite in space, is about the size of a soccer pitch. Now, that's huge, right? That's really, really big. But it's not big enough to see unless the two spacecraft were quite close together. And in this case, we know that the ISS was quite far away from Orion when it went up. It's also worth remembering that Earth is really, really big. So while there's plenty of space objects up there, over 10,000 Starlink satellites alone at this point, the size of Earth is just so big that it's hard to see these things in orbit.
And even though there's a lot of satellites, they're small.
Yeah.
Now a question from Killian, who's aged 8, and he asks, why did they bother building Artemis when they already had the Saturn V rocket?
Saturn V was built by NASA for Apollo, and the last Apollo mission went up about 50 years ago. So I definitely am not sure that I would want to put myself on a rocket that's 50 years old. They have changed some of the things as well. So the SLS, or the Space Launch System, it's got 2 rocket boosters which are strapped alongside it, whereas, you know, Saturn V, for example, only has kind of the one big booster.
And also the Space Launch System is lighter and it produces more thrust. So it's more powerful by weight than what the Saturn V rocket was.
Slightly smaller as well. More bang for your buck.
Okay, and a question now from Robert, and this is a fun one. In one of the earlier episodes, you mentioned that moon launches are aimed to where the moon will be by the time it gets there. Could we also send a vehicle across the solar system to meet the Earth in 6 months' time on the other side of the sun?
I love it when people are paying attention. That's a great question. We've done the maths on this, and we think that you would probably have to go much faster than we're capable of, especially if you've got humans aboard. Now, interestingly here, it's actually because the sun is in the middle, you would have to kind of go round the sun, or if you could manage to go straight through it, maybe. But even if you could do all of those things, the Earth is traveling about 107,000 kilometers per hour around the sun, which is much faster than the spacecrafts that we're using. So I think you'd be better off just getting a lift on Earth and waiting the 6 months.
And finally, we've got this great question from Amber, and she wrote in with, "Recently, I was sharing my excitement with a friend who surprised me by being slightly doubtful about the whole mission. He didn't go as far as saying he doesn't believe we have landed on the moon. However, he couldn't understand why we have taken so long to go back again, especially considering the huge progress that's occurred with technology over the past 50 years. Is there an obvious answer to this?"
This is a really good question, and it's a question that I've been getting a lot as well. Like, we did it once, why are we doing it again? I think that we're doing it again now because we're kind of in a second space race. So China said that it wants to put an astronaut on the moon by 2030, and America and American companies are very interested in making sure that they shape how this goes forward. So to think about what we have gotten better at in the last 50 years, it's not necessarily space travel. We finished the moon missions. We stopped doing that. When we think about the technology of this, which I think is an interesting part of your question, Amber, we're not very good at going to the moon because we haven't prioritized it. And that's okay. You know, there's lots of things that we've gotten a lot better at in the last 50 years, like the internet, mobile phones. There's lots of good stuff. But if you don't invest the money and you don't prioritize it, it's just not something that's likely to happen. And I think that's what's happened here.
It was, you know, pretty soon after the Apollo missions that people kind of lost interest in going to the moon. Yeah. People didn't turn out for space launches anymore.
Yeah.
It was just another, another mission. Okay, great.
Yeah, I guess for me at least, Artemis 2 felt really novel and really beautiful. And will the next mission be as exciting? I don't know. But it definitely felt like something exciting and new because I guess we haven't done it for the last 50 years.
Yeah, a whole new generation of astronauts.
And we love all of them.
And they've written in with so many amazing questions and we've loved hearing them all. Thank you so, so much for being so generous with your curious minds. And if you're going through space withdrawals, I mean, you might have to wait till mid next year before you get any more Artemis updates. We really recommend scrolling back in the Science Friction feed and giving the Challenger Legacy a listen. Just a warning, though, it might not be suitable for kiddos.
Yeah, and I'll be back soon for a very special new series of Science Friction. So stick around in the feed.
Artemis Explained was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and produced by Shelby Traynor. I'm Belinda Smith.
And I'm Jacinta Bowler. Catch you next time.